Welcome to Sitka Tells Tales, airing live on KCAW. I'm your host, Ellen Frankenstein, with Leanne Sear. Excited to be here with a live audience in Sitka. We're here in Tlingit-Ani, the ancestral homelands of the Tlingit people, with respect and gratitude for the place and the people who have lived here and told stories since time immemorial. The theme tonight is Rough Seas, tales and music of harrowing experiences and close calls on the water. It's a celebration and collaboration of Arc Change, the Alaska Marine Safety Education Organization, Harbor Mountain Brewery, and Raven Radio.
My name is Leanne Sear. I'm the executive director of AMSEA, Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, and we are really excited to co-host this event, and we really would like to give honor to Jerry Dugan, who was AMSEA's leader for over 36 years. At least from my perspective, Jerry is one of AMSEA's most powerful storytellers, and that's because he has become a subject matter expert. He's read hundreds of vessel disaster reports and interviewed many survivors of vessel disasters, and then he takes those stories and he shares them with other mariners so that we can learn from each other and prevent injury, loss of property, or loss of livelihood, and loss of life, which is most important. I would also just like to make a disclaimer that the stories that will be shared tonight, as I'm sure you know, are not stories from AMSEA, but they are from the community, and they do not reflect AMSEA best practices or lessons learned.
Uh-oh.
I've attended some events that I need to make that disclaimer. And then on a more serious note, I would like to also just make the point that, some of the stories that will be shared are about survival stories. So then also acknowledging that many mariners have not survived vessel disasters, and that a lot of the storytelling could be sensitive or challenging for the storytellers or for listeners. So thank you for holding space for that. And I'll give it back over to Ellen.
Yeah, thanks, Leanne. We're super excited for the music and stories we have for this edition of Sitka Tells Tales. Storytellers for this episode are Tim Fulton, Mariah Warren, Spencer Severson, Pat Kehoe, Lance Preston, with music from Los Castaways, the White-Bellied Wizards, and Anel and Los Vatos. We are so appreciative of the performers and everyone who's made this evening possible. So now, we're going to start off with the band Los Castaways. They've been playing with each other in various iterations for a year and a half, performing at a few local grinds, house shows, at Porch Fest, and they can't wait to make their brewery debut. Their name comes from the first song they learned together, Castaways, making them a perfect fit for tonight's tales. Take it.
Oh, hey, I didn't see you there. I'm not sure how you got here exactly. We didn't think anyone lived on this island. Well, I guess since you're here now, I'll introduce you to our crew. Here we got Kev, he's our shipwright. He's from the white sand beaches of somewhere a little warmer than here. In the back, we got Cooper. Cooper is the cook, of course, and he cooks us delicious food. He's also from somewhere a little warmer, but a little bit weirder. Next, we got Aaron. Aaron's our first mate. We actually don't know where Erin's from. But she's our only, like, real musician, so we try not to ask too many questions. Of course, next we got Michelle, our navigator, our compass rose, our North Star. And last year we got Lily, our fearless commander, and our miraculous savior. And I almost forgot, I'm Noah, and I just kind of bang on things. And together, we are...
Castaways.
On a deserted island isn't all bad. It's incredibly beautiful. The mountains and the ocean are nearby. No dress code. But housing's been kind of hard to come by. We've been looking for months and there's just nothing in our price range. Food prices are just like super inflated. And the tourists, I mean the wildlife, is kind of problematic. We've been on this deserted island for a long time now. I'm sure you're wondering how we got here.
We were out at sea on a sailing ship. The rain began to rain and the wind began to whip. We felt the ship tear. We were going.
Wondering how we survived on this island alone. While we went through some trouble early on, we eventually banded together and became a bit of a family. We also had some folks from AMC visit and they gave us submarine safety and first aid training and, you know, helped us fix our ship. So why are we still here then? The truth is, we aren't sure if we could make it anywhere else. So I guess we just are.
Castaways. We are castaways. Ahoy there, ahoy. We are castaways. On an island at sea. Just me, Erin, Michelle, and the other three. Castaways, ahoy, we are castaways.
All right, thank you, Los Castaways. That was an amazing adventure. I'm excited to introduce Tim Fulton. Tim started fishing when he was 13 years old in Cordova. He was a skipper of a boat when he was 15. His dad was a logger, and he always told Tim not to become a logger. But with his second close call as a fisherman, he changed his mind and said, "I don't want you to become a fisherman." I'd rather you become a logger. So Tim got a land job and has been pretty happy with not putting his life at risk. Welcome, Tim.
Thank you all very much. First, I just want to say thank you to Jerry and AMC for the difference he's made making the water safer around Sitka, around Alaska, and around the U.S. and the world. So it's it really makes a difference. So it was the summer of 1985, and I found myself back in the fishing industry, and I wasn't too excited about it. I still had way too many memories of the close calls that I'd had when I was in the fishing industry before. Been 8 years since I'd been out, had a safe landside job, and I was back in Cordova in that fishery there. And I was hired as a skipper for a 48-foot seiner that had been converted to a tender. Now, a tender is something that buys fish from fishermen and will take it to the canneries or the cold storages for them to process. This particular one, we had been lucky to have been running the perilous bars of Copper River Flats, and now we were in about 12 hours in a nice, calm inlet from Cordova. And the only problem we had was having enough fuel, gas, to sell to our bow pickers that we were buying their fish from. So there was a boat that was in a fishery that was a couple hours further out than where we were that was heading back to Cordova, and it had a couple hundred gallons of fuel. So we decided that we would get the fuel from them. We'd meet out in the middle of Prince William Sound and transfer the fuel, and we'd have some for our fishermen. So we got out there at the rendezvous place, and this boat was a 110-foot aluminum crabber that it was converted to a tender, and she had two bow pickers that were broke down in tow, so she had to keep running to keep the bow pickers from running into her or each other. So we pulled up to her, got tied up, she's still underway, and we start transferring fuel. The skipper from the other boat handed me the hose, and I put it in the tank. And as soon as I hit the handle, I heard this sound like a bottle rocket going off underwater. And the next thing I know, I'm in the water coming to the surface. And I come up and I look around and I look back, and there's the Don L is the boat that we're running. The fleet affectionately knew her as the Duck Lips, and she's on fire. And at that time, I see my girlfriend, deckhand. Many of you know and remember Kyle Chambers. She later became my wife. And I see her jumping into the water. And, you know, in these times, you just react. So I remember I had this nice Austrian Yodeler's cap, and I remember making sure that was on my head. And then I started swimming for the bow picker, because I knew we needed to have some type of a platform to be on. I made it to the bow picker, and how I did it to this day, I'm not sure, but bow pickers, their bulwarks are like 3 feet or more above the water, and so that's the sides of the boat. And I got myself up and into this bow picker, and at that same time, the skipper from the other boat is there, and I help him in. And I look around, I'm getting my bearings, and I look over, and there's Kyle, and she's hanging on to a 55-gallon drum out there in the middle of the ocean. And by the way, the temperature of this water is 42 degrees. So I'm going, this is kind of when I knew I was in trouble, but I was going to marry this gal. I got a hold of the other skipper, and I said, cut this boat loose, cut the bow picker loose, so I have something to come back to. I grabbed a buoy, and I jumped over, and I went over to where Kyle was, and I immediately regretted that decision, because she was so excited. She's hanging on to me, and I'm going under, right? I just know that she's going to drown me, but we got her calmed down, and we're getting our bearings, look around to see where that bow picker is, at that time, the Duck Lips had burnt through her lines and came between us, still on fire, between us and that bow picker. And it was consuming so much oxygen, this fire, that just with our heads in this buoy above the water, it's sucking us towards that flame. So we're there keeping away from that, and Kyle's going, I'd like to be on a beach in Hawaii at this point. And I'm going, I kind of like it right here, right? So I have no idea how long we were in the water, but the Duck Lips finally sank. We made it back to the bow picker. At this point, the skipper was no longer there. The flame had sucked the bow picker into the Duck Lips, and he had burned himself trying to get away. Eventually, he's fine now. But he grabbed the survival suit and jumped over. And we made it back to the bow picker. Once again, I don't know how I did it, but I got myself up into the bow picker. I got Kyle up there. We went in, we dried off, changed clothes. And about that time, there was another boat pulls up. And it was a seiner that had been just anchoring when the explosion happened. And he came up to us, and he had found the skipper in the survival suit. And then they figured it was 55 minutes to then. And anyhow, there were 7.5 people involved with this instance. The Alliance smoldered for 2 more days and finally sank. I got a job and was on a boat the next day. And that's my story. So thank you.
Thanks, Tim. And even though I've done safety drills and made films for AMSI, I pick up on that line, I don't know how we did it. So now it's time for Mariah Warren. Mariah Warren is a lifelong Alaskan with deep roots in the maritime community. She holds degrees in communication and marine transportation from the University of Alaska, and she's been a marine safety and survival instructor since 2016. In addition to extensive experience aboard cruising and sailing vessels, she has been a commercial fisher since 2006 and a captain in the fishing industry since 2015. When not at sea, she enjoys traveling the world, as well as striving to the captain's life adventures through photography and the written word. And welcome a special stand-in for Mariah, her mother, Chris.
Well, Mariah would really love to be here, but she's partway to a haul-out appointment in Wrangell, so I will speak her words for her. Bill and Billy showed up in the bay on a bright yellow cruiser named the Zumi. Bill was tall and lean and wore an old wool sweater with holes, his extra tufts patched with dingy glue. He was quiet and circumspect, smiling shyly through a deep tangle of beard, mostly with his eyes. He said his wife started drinking hard and hitting Billy, so it was time to go. Billy was 5, always hugging his dad's skinny leg as together they closely watched the world. We took them in from the beginning, played with Billy in the dirt of the yard, washed his face, pushed him on the rope swing. He never spoke of his mother that I recall. Bill Tyler didn't speak much of the past. He melded into Edna Bay life as much as anyone could, a jumbled handful of misfits, finding their place at the far edge of the world, the fringes of society, the gray or blue of the Pacific, just through a few small islands to the west, and beyond that, nothing of dirt till Japan. It was the kind of place where no one asked too many questions, but most people thrived on guessing. My dad showed him purple shamrock growing in our yard, said it was supposed to be lucky, and Bill said he didn't believe in luck anymore, though maybe he still believed in love. I pondered those two concepts, pushing Billy on the rope swing, trying to decide which was more dangerous to believe in, which more demonstrably false or true. We were caught up in a square dancing craze the year I was 12, turning 13, the year Bill and Billy came to town. Half the community showed up, twice a week through the fall and winter months, rallying to dubbed cassette tape bands, stomping the floor of a rickety shop Jack Rogers built next to his sawmill out of rough-cut planks. Four couples to form a square, and occasionally we had enough for two. It was the most social our little fishing town had ever been, the most in sync while the moment lasted. Bill was alone and I had no partner, so we got paired a lot. He was a good dancer, understated but quick in his patched, shuffling boots, warm calluses of working hands, curls mopped under a stocking cap, chuckling behind his round glasses. Allemand left, Allemand right, back to your partner, Grand Square. The little kids played together in a corner, making up stories of their own. Bill toured us around the Zumi once, a lean wooden hull not designed for fishing, but for some other time and place where folks cruised sheltered inlets just for fun. He said that boats were four-dimensional, larger on the inside than the outside, and the Zumi more so than most. I've thought of that ever since, spanning the carapace of planks and fair curves with my mind's eye, then stepping inside to find that extra dimension. I quote Bill Taylor Tyler, wanting to give fair credit, wondering who all remembers him anymore. After he was gone, the Zumi stayed too long tied to the outside dock and sank at least once before being towed off to deeper water or some quiet cove. Bright yellow splinters at the high tide line somewhere, faded now by the years. Bill was a chill guy and strong, the deckhand everyone needed. He left Billy ashore with a square dancing family and trolled a bit before the dive fisheries found him, the kind of guy you'd want topside, making sure the anchor held and the air kept flowing. December 13th, 16 years later, somewhere outside Hecate Island where the ocean rolls in and stacks up on the reefs, I clawed in blackness for the top of the ladder. The world lay on its beam ends, taking breakers fully over, silver glint in the running lights of the cabin top lockbox with the survival suits. The boat screamed. There wasn't time for thinking, but I had a flash then of Bill and his harvest divers, lost off Doll Head, where the ocean rolls in and stacks up on the reefs. Nothing found but a tote lid and an oil slick. And we had a moment, Bill Tyler and I. Just another guy you could trust with your air supply, trying to keep the diver dude safe and make it home when the long trip's over. A boat's four-dimensional, and you can get lost in there, folded into the fabric of memories and places that don't exist anymore. One day you may duck through some battered companionway, slip into unfamiliar realms, and never find your way back out. I still dream of the Equity sometimes, rising from the breakers where we left her that December night, broad decks shining again and her rigging strong. A boat, to her crew, is everything. She's a friend. She is home. She is the breath held in your lungs when you dream of drowning. How do you let go when there is nothing else but the cold ocean? Maybe luck gets rolled up like a survival suit, arms wrapped around its knees, pushed away somewhere inaccessibly deep. Maybe love is a life raft, origami folded in patient darkness, waiting for its moment to be deployed. Just because it couldn't save you doesn't mean it wasn't there. The chasm between who survives and who is lost opens up in a moment, a corroded zipper splitting between the life you left behind you and final moments in a winter ocean. Between loved ones back home and the person they'll remember as the years slip by. I clung to the top of the ladder, braced between one sock foot and one extra tuff pulled on in the only time I had. The phrase in my mind, to die with your boots on, and launched myself toward the suits.
Thank you, Chris, and thank you, Mariah. That story is really powerful. Next up, the White-Bellied Wizards. They have been playing music together for a few years and enjoy writing songs about fishing and boat adventures and misadventures. They are passionate procrastinators, enjoy playing music, and thrive at 40 fathoms on sandy bottoms.
Thank you, everyone. I'm Sarah, and this is Blake. We're gonna start off with this song called Dragon. About 3 weeks ago, I called my dad, and I was freaking out. I was like, I have to write this song in 3 weeks about boats for this event. And the next day, he sent me a little excerpt, and I built off of it a few days ago. So this is the result.
Thank you.
Sunset, dragon's breath hovers over passages and inlets. On that night, felt the cold running through her bones, sailing toward the windy shore, hands in her pockets. Charting, plotting her dead reckoning, curious of a wavering. She don't fit in. Grew up hearing stories and tales of Jonah and a stinky whale, but it was just a big fish.
Thank you guys so much. This next song we first performed at a grind back in December, I think. So if you were there, feel free to pretend like it's your first time listening. And it's a little bit about some lessons that Sarah and I have learned over the years here, and they are sort of boat adjacent. So I'm gonna say they're related to the theme, but I'll let you judge if it's topical or not. It's called Tough Shrimpin'.
You'll find when you drop your pots back behind the beehives, and it pays to go fishing with wiser minds and hear about the memories of past times. Oh, I shot my first deer this year. I wanted to make sausage with it. The recipe called for pork suet.
It's pork fat.
Now my deal tastes just like Jimmy Dean. I could have bought it at the store and saved myself a whole bunch of hiking. But then where would I be? Shrimping is what you find if you drop your pots back behind the beehive. And a place to go fishing with wiser minds to hear about the memories of past times. One day my captain sent me on an errand, pick up some snap hooks and new tufts at Murray's,
which is allegedly Don Callahan,
or so we've been told.
Drove for 3 hours back and forth, couldn't find it, so I stopped and at a store called See Daddy's to see what he might say. Told me, hon, you're a few years late, go and find a boy, bring him back for a day. I bid him adieu with fried fish in my hand. Go fishing with wiser minds to hear about the memories of past times.
When the rain's coming down, you just might feel low on vitamin D. Go with purple rays of sunshine that walks on HBR. I recommend you wave at that lady. Our friend Angie gave us a lesson last week about tucking your boots into your bibs, or your bibs into your boots, or your jacket into your bibs. I can't quite remember.
You'll find if you drop your pots back behind the beehive. And a place to go fishing with wiser minds to hear about the memories of past times. One day my captain sent me on an errand,
drop your pots back behind the beehive. And a place to go fishing with wiser minds to hear about the memories of past times.
Dutch shrimping is what you'll find drop your pots back behind the beehives. And a place to go fishing with wiser minds to hear about the memories of past times.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, let's give another hand to the white-bellied wizard. Okay, are you ready for our next Sitka Tells Tales Rough Seas Teller? Okay, it's Spencer Severson. Spencer has been on and under the water, sailing and commercial diving and fishing for 55 years. When not on the ocean, he's often building or repairing something. And full disclosure, if you didn't know it, Spencer is my other half. So when you hear his story, keep in mind, as he was out in the water, I was home on land as the word of rough seas, bad weather, came in, along with reports from other commercial sea cucumber harvesting divers that something was not right, which is a reminder that all these stories don't just impact the people at the thing, but all the families and community. So with that, come on up, Spencer.
Well, Jerry demanded that I tell this story, so here it is, Jerry. I was fortunate enough to be able to dive till I was 70 years old, and I loved every moment of it. I really loved my work. Well, this story took place about 20 years ago, and it was during the sea cucumber season, and I had a breakdown on my boat, and I couldn't make it out for the day and a half opening. The openings take place on Monday, and they get over at noon on Tuesday. And I, during the week, I had hoped to get my boat repaired, but it wasn't. And so I was really going to miss an opening, which was going to cost money and really bum me out. But my neighbor down the dock, Eric Holmland, was generous enough to... He was shrimping, and he said, well, I can leave my shrimp pots soak, and I've still got my dive gear on, my dive hoses and everything on, and a compressor on the boat, so I'll take you out. I'll take you out, and I'll tend you. So we headed over. The fishery was getting late in the season. It was November, and the zones that were still open were pretty far from town. So we ended up going to the other side of Chatham on the west coast of Admiralty Island. Well, the next day I dove until we got up until 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and we ended up about 20 miles north of Angoon. I'd been diving pretty deep, and I ran out of bottom time. I had to come up and gas off. So Eric said, I've still got my suit aboard. I'm going to make a jump. So I was a little uncomfortable because I wasn't familiar with this boat. I'd never driven the boat. My first time on it. But nonetheless, he jumped in the water, and I started following his bubbles and hauling his cukes and cutting his cukes and busy, busy, busy. Well, there was a storm warning for Tuesday, and we were wondering whether we were even going to be able to work on Tuesday. And I had gotten pretty wet on my dive. I had a leak around my throat, and I'd gotten water inside my dry suit down on my chest and my stomach. So I was getting really cold cutting on the deck. But I thought, well, the day's almost over. I'll be able to change out of this suit, get warm. But it was getting worse and worse. The weather was getting really bad. And I was starting to feel uncomfortable. We had a lot of weight on deck. The totes were full of cucumbers. And I told Eric, you better come up and have a look and tell me if everything's okay up here. Well, he came up and... I waited too long. When he got to the ladder, the bowl rolled over, and we both ended up in the water. So there was nothing to do but swim ashore, so we started walking. We decided we were going to walk toward Angoon because we thought that there were guys still diving, and somewhere down the beach we would see another dive boat, and then we'd get somebody to come in and rescue us. Well, it was a lot harder getting down the beach than you guys know what it's like walking through the beaches of Southeast. So we had to cut up through the woods, and we had to swim around points, and we had to swim across Fish Creek. It just took forever. But we finally did see a boat, but he was just pulling his anchor and leaving. And he headed straight across to Peril Strait. Mind you, it's snowing and blowing and raining all at the same time. So all we could do is just keep going until it got dark. And then we hung out we spent the night in the woods, and I about froze to death. I was so wet, you know, and I'd lost my hat, so I didn't have anything covering my head. And in the morning, I was so cold that I could barely walk, to tell the truth. I could just barely stand up and walk. But we kept going, and we didn't see any sign of any rescuers. We didn't, so we figured people thought, well, they're still diving. And we kept going all day, and then that night in the woods again. Well, that night was the worst night. I was like getting so cold by then. And the next morning, I was literally, when we got going the next morning, I was literally counting 20 steps at a time and then sitting down. Eric's a younger guy, quite a bit younger than me, and he built more stout. He still had his hood on, and his suit wasn't wet. So he was holding up pretty good. Besides, he's tough as nails. But I was really holding him back. So we kept going, and then we saw the Coast Guard helicopter going up and down Chatham Strait, so we knew that they were looking for us. And we saw a plane go by, and we could actually see the pilot following the beach, but he didn't look our way. And we were waving our arms, and he went on by us. And we ended up getting down to Angoon. But when we got there, we still had the Kusinu Channel with that raging current. And we couldn't very well swim across that. But we looked across at the work float over there, and there was a whole bunch of skiffs, and there was somebody giving them instructions, and they were getting ready to clear us that they were a rescue committee. So one skiff after another went raging, went up the Kootsinoo Channel and headed straight out into Chatham and started heading north. And none of them even looked over. They didn't think that we'd be that close, I guess. And not only that, but they were too far away in the middle of the channel. But one skiff, literally the last one, left and went straight across and over to the rocks on our side. And he started following up the beach real slowly. And we stood out on the end of the rocks and waved our arms. Well, it was Alvin Jack, the harbor master in Angoon. And he said, what he told us later, that he said, of course, if, where else are you going to be? You're going to be, if you're still alive, you're going to be walking down the beach. And but we got aboard his boat and he handed me a cup of coffee. And I've never liked anything quite as much as that. I'd like to tell you how wonderful the people in Angoon were finding us warm clothes and a place to stay. But I can't because I just don't have enough time. So that's another story.
Thank you, Spencer. There are so many lessons in that story. Vessel stability, learning about the boat before you're on it, the survival once you're in the water and then having to survive on land. Thank you for sharing that. So I'm going to introduce you to Pat Kehoe. Pat has worn a whole slew of hats over the course of time. Over the 40 years she's been in Sitka, she's been fishing most of that time. But most recently, she's been helping teach classes for AMSI because she feels so strongly about how much we all owe to the organization and to Jerry Dugan, who made that all happen.
Way back in ancient history, I was working a real job down south and things were fine. And one day I woke up and thought, I'm going to go commercial fishing in Alaska. I've never done anything physical in my life. I fished. Somebody put the bait on the hook and they gaffed their fish aboard. And yeah, I was fishing. So pretty soon I was on the back deck of the Blanco, a 56-foot longliner, and we were headed for Cross Sound, and it was the worst weather. The tides were high, the currents were terrible, the gear came back in huge piles of snarl, and the fishing was lousy, and the money was worse, and I still loved it. And so pretty soon they said they'd had enough of that and they were headed for California to go tuna fishing. And I said, can I go? And they said, no, we don't need you. We've got another deckhand coming. So luckily in the long run, I ended up on the Arnie, which was another sister ship actually to the Blanco, a beautiful 56-foot longliner. And we were cruising across the Gulf. And I'm kind of combining a couple of stories here, a couple of years here, actually. So sorry about that. So we're cruising across the Gulf. We headed for Kodiak. And when you fish out west, the weather is really unpredictable. And there's this wonderful woman in Kodiak, Peggy Dyson, I believe, who for 40 years gave the weather day after day, 8 o'clock in the morning and 6 o'clock at night. She told what the weather forecast was for the area, and then she told the probability that the forecast was right. So there you were, and you got what you got. So we're leaving Kodiak, and we have to drop some stuff off in Uganic Bay, and which is on the down Shelikof Strait side of Kodiak Island. And the weather forecast is lousy. So we tie everything down on board and are steaming away and the weather's building, things are banging around. And the Arnavi's a beautiful old boat and it's wallowed like a cow, huge roll to one side and it'd hold and then roll to the other side and then kind of kick like she wanted to get you off her back. So there we were, and things were bad, and all of a sudden there's this horrible thunking noise, and we run to the back deck and realize that the boom's broken loose, and the boom's a huge big timber that is attached to the mast on one end and tied on the back end of the boat. And so the waves are crashing down on the boat, and nobody's going to go out there. So we tie a line around Steve Amos, famous deckhand, his waist, and we send him out and he ties the boom down and we pull him back in. And so we're okay and we're on our way again. And the weather keeps building. And pretty soon everybody decides, well, they're going to go down and hit the bunk and rock and roll down there. And I'm the lowly deckhand, the youngest, dumbest person on board. I don't know. And I've got wheel watch from 11 o'clock at night to 3 in the morning. And all night long, the seas come crashing down, the boat rolls. Far off in the distance, I hear a tug saying that where they are, the winds are 60 knots and the seas are 30 feet. And we're going, that's about what it is. And I felt like I got smaller and smaller and smaller as I sat there. I thought, by morning, I'm going to have white hair and, maybe be alive, maybe. Anyway, the weather's terrible, but luckily the Arnie's in really good shape. She's been lovingly restored in a beautiful boat, and that probably saved us because she held the iron mic, old-fashioned autopilot that you engaged, and it went and the boat and the Arnie, the boat, all of us, we all sloshed around, and in the morning the weather got a little better and we made it on down, and I've been fishing for another 35 and a half years. Thank you.
We appreciate that, Pat, and thanks for sharing your story. So we have one more story coming up of fishing friendship and leaking decks from Lance Preston. Lance has been fishing out of Sitka for 31 years, mostly on trollers and longliners. He says it used to be interesting to say that he grew up adjacent to the Bronx, but now he's not so set on that.
Hey, Jerry, I should have talked to you before this whole event went down. This was 3 weeks into being a skipper of my very own trolling vessel. And I was on the other side of Kruzoff Island in Shelikov Bay. I had my girlfriend aboard. My girlfriend, Rachel, she wasn't very fishy. She wasn't born to be a mariner, but I was very lucky to have her aboard, as it would turn out. I was full. I had a slush tank. The slush was getting thin. I thought it was time to get back to town. I was very ambitious. I wanted to be a highliner. I wanted to turn the boat around really fast and get back on the water. The fish plant was going to close at 10. So I'm cruising. I pulled the gear. I'm going around the Cape. And my buddy calls. My buddy Andy. He's been my friend since the sixth grade. He's also from New York, and he's got himself a boat called the Trio 2. He says he's an hour or two behind me, roughly. He wants to go to town, too. But maybe, hey, will you wait up for me? Because it turns out I got no DC power. I've got no sounder. I've got no plotter. And I'm like, well, what about your pumps? He's in an old leaky boat. He's like, it's okay. I go down there with a bucket every, 15 minutes. I'm keeping up with it fine. Chatting away with me. Blah, blah, blah. We had a lot of banter back then on the radio. And then I realized, man, what are we talking? How are you even talking to me without DC power? I'm on this handheld. Well, man, we're going to kill the battery on that thing. Let's stop talking. And okay. So I'm an hour or two ahead. I'm ambitious. I want to get to town. Should I wait up? He's like, it's fine. I get all the way to town. I go past the anchorage where everyone anchors up behind St. Lazaria. I go by Vitskary. The sun is getting close to setting. I get into Sitka in time to get to the ice chute. I barely know how to drive this boat. Every time I pull up to anything, my heart's beating. My heart's beating anyway. And then on the VHF radio, I hear Andy on channel 16 taking on a lot of water in between St. Lazaria and Vitskary Rocks. Then I hear nothing. Then some guy gets on. There's all this radio confusion. It's not Andy. The Coast Guard gets on. Who is this? There's no answer. They had Coast Guard again. Who's taking on water? Blah, blah, blah. I get on. I say, I know who's taking on water. His name is Andy. The vessel is the Trio 2. There's one person aboard. It's a wood troller. It's white. It's blah, blah, blah. I untied from the fish plant. I'd been squirting ice into my slush tank. And I'm heading out there. I don't know what I'm going to do. He's 2 or 3 hours away. But I know I left him behind. And I'm starting to feel pretty terrible about the fact. I go past Chaponsky Island, and thank heavens, lifting from the island is a Coast Guard helicopter like a phoenix flying up and toward the scarlet sky. And I'm thinking, okay, it's okay. If anybody's going to find him, it's going to be the chopper. I know I'm not going to find him. I'm going out anyway. So I'm watching the chopper. I'm daring to feel relief. The chopper is going over the whole area. It goes over it once. But then it turns around, and it's going over it now twice. And then it turns around, and it goes over it a third time. And it gets on the radio and says, it's run out of fuel, and they're going back to town. Now, I don't know how a big chopper with a searchlight is not going to be able to find my friend, and I somehow am. Shortly after, I'm bobbing off Vitsgary Rocks. I'm in 9 fathoms. I could throw a frisbee at the rocks. And everyone's out there looking for Andy by this point. And the Coast Guard gets on and says, well, we can't find him visually. Let's do an auditory search. Well, I'll tell you what an auditory search is turn off your engines, get out on deck, and yell out into the night and see if you hear anything. And when you're there and haven't slept for 20 hours and your girlfriend's on the back deck, Andy! Shrieking out into the night, and all you can hear is the waves lapping against the rocks, you don't feel too good. It was around then where I'm about ready to crumple up and die or dive overboard or something, and feeling terrible about myself and thinking that I've really dissed my friend and probably had lost him at that point. It was around then that Rachel, who said, you know, wasn't your fault the whole time trying to talk me down, she says, has anybody looked behind St. Lazaria Island where all the boats anchor up every night? Man, I stared at her and I grabbed the mic and I got on Channel 16 and said to the Coast Guard and everybody else I've been courting with all night, has anybody looked behind St. Lazaria Island where all the boats anchor every night? Well, this is really, truly an epic tale. This story should be told over 15 minutes, 20 minutes, what Andy went through, how he was hydrating himself, drinking from canned vegetables because his power was out and his water pump was out, and he was freezing to death because the stove went out because it needed DC power and had a lift pump. All that you're going to have to get from me another time.
Thank you, Lance. I think that story is a reminder of how complicated rescues are, eh? And we do appreciate the Coast Guard, right? Yeah, we appreciate the Coast Guard. And I want to thank all our storytellers and all our musicians. Let's hear another clap. Because you help us bring Sitka Tells Tales live to you in person and to those on the radio and those who may listen to it later on podcast. So again, I want to thank Los Castaways, Tim Fulton, Maria and Chris Warren, the White-Bellied Wizard, Spencer Severson, Pat Kehoe, Lance Preston, and Annelle and Los Vatos, who you're going to hear from, and to Jerry Dugan for his work training thousands of youth and adults and making our time on the water so much safer.
Thank you also to Harbor Mountain Brewery, Campfire Pizza for making food, beverages, and this space available to us, and to the Sitka Daily Sentinel, the Sitka Soup for helping us get the word out, our timer Rachel Thompson, photographer Leon Claire, to Lucy and Rich Phillips on the board at Raven Radio now, to Becky Myers, Gene Stolberg, and John Hirchenreiter for tech help, and to Dave Emmert, who edits our shows and gets them ready for podcasts and use in the future. And we appreciate the listeners on KCAW Raven Radio. And of course, our live audience. It's been awesome to collaborate, have this collaboration between AMZ, Art Change, Raven Radio, Harbor Mountain Brewery. Thank you.
And just to let you know, you can hear Sick of Tales Tales usually on the KCW the third Tuesday of the month, either a show from the vault or an event. And if you have ideas for stories or themes or have feedback, go to Sick of Tales Tales and artchangeinc@gmail.com. And now we want to hear from Anel and Los Vatos. Their adventure begins on an open mic night at the Mean Queen. Jam nights, fun nights, also a Sick of Tales Tales, I think. Then they cooked up their own music, having the opportunity to share in different places in Alaska, meeting incredible people just like you, and here they are.
Thank you so much. And that was Mar, which I think is appropriate for this show because it means sea. And that's one of our songs, actually. A pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for inviting us. And this one is about the time.